This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Australian comedian Matt O'Kine has had a massive few years, going from being the national breakfast radio host on Triple J to writing and acting in his very own TV series, The Other Guy, to now writing his first novel, Being Black and Chicken and Chips, which is a coming-of-age tale based on his own life experience. We're so thrilled to have Matt joining us on the show today. Good morning, Matt O'Kine.
Well, it's not just me. It's my daughter, Sophia, as well, who's sitting on my lap, who happened to be laughing as you were describing me as a comedian. So I don't know whether she is agreeing with you or thinks that it's so outrageous to call me that, that it's laughable.
Oh, mate, welcome to dadhood. They just have no respect for what you've accomplished, have they?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what she doesn't have respect for right now is the cord on my hoodie jumper, because I reckon that's inches away from getting the full-blown pulled-out treatment.
Oh, and when that happens, you know there's
you
no...
You can't get them back in.
Getting
back.
There's no track pants and hoodies. They're all... Those cords are gone, long gone.
you recently just had an issue in emergency with your daughter, right?
Oh, I know. I mean, kids, they terrify you. I realised I'm going to spend my whole life worrying from this day forth. No, look, what happened was she was just playing on my lap, just sort of bouncing around, and I was talking to my partner behind me about what we're going to have for dinner, and then next minute, Sophia just starts bawling, like really, really upset. She kind of like bumped her head lightly against my shoulder, but nothing wild. And then, you know, we sort of put her to bed. I'm thinking she might have been just a bit unsettled. And then when we woke up, she couldn't use her arm. And we're freaking out. Like, she just wouldn't use her arm. And so we went to the emergency. And shout out to everyone at the RPA hospital and all the emergency wards around Australia. They're absolute legends. They make you feel like, you know, like you're not an idiot, which is really what you need to feel at those times. Because you feel like an idiot sometimes, you know. And we walk in, the doctor just poked her shoulder. Nothing happened. Then he poked her elbow and she let out a little squeal. And then he just does a little... this weird little clicky twisty thing, and suddenly he's like, oh, there you go, that's it, good to go. And you should have seen it. He literally goes, in 5 minutes, she'll be good as new. And we thought, you can't just solve a medical problem in 5 minutes. Like, that, you know, like, I don't know anything that can be solved medically in 5 minutes. And then, sure enough, 5 minutes later, she was back there slapping things and grabbing things, and, yeah, she had what's called a nursemaid's elbow, I think.
Right.
Yes, which is not to be mistaken for a handmaid's tail, which is a completely different thing.
It is. Mate, can I give you a piece of advice as a dad with a boy slightly older?
We've
been to the emergency ward every year, once a year, maybe twice a year for my son. Just become best friends with the guy who runs emergency ward. And you get on the fast track. So we can now go to two different hospitals. I just give him a call in advance and we go in the special entrance.
You know, I reckon emergency wards should have the same like frequent flyers as you know, like as your Virgins or your Qantas. So you rock up and instead of going to the regular emergency ward, you go to the ward with the with the free drinks and the sandwiches, the private entry.
There's a barista
I'm liking
there.
This.
Yeah,
I'm going to sign up to the RPA rewards program. I can't wait.
Well, let us know when you're in and the secret code to get in as well.
Yeah, we need that too.
Yeah.
Look, let's talk about your debut novel. It's out today. Can you tell us what it's about?
Yeah, look, I mean, speaking of hospitals and stuff, it's about a 12-year-old boy who's trying to start high school while his mum dies of cancer. It's a comedy. It's a comedy, I promise. There's heaps of funny stuff in there, but there's also, you know, some really touching, poignant sort of moments. And really, I just wanted to capture a book that really showcases or, you know, the sort of way the young person deals with grief in a realistic way and the way that parents deal with something that sort of full on as well, you know?
Mate, I feel like there's a bit of blurred reality going on because Mike grows up in a city called Brindlewood. You grew up in Brisbane. How much of this story is actually you, bud?
Look, there's definitely some parallel, you know, existence or whatever you want to call it. I mean, look, the main crux of the story is certainly something that happened to me when I was 12. My mum died of cancer. It was in Brisbane. And yeah, and I guess the whole point of writing this show was to really sort of capture an honesty, a realness of that time and that place, and what it's like when you are 12 and having to sort of deal with something that a lot of us don't have to deal with until we're well into our, you know, adulthood and have a much firmer grasp on the world. So there's an innocence to it all, a naivety. There's a lot of fun to it, even though, you know, he has to go to visit his mum in hospital and watch her sort of condition deteriorate her. There's also a lot of joy around the other parts of his life, and he finds a lot of love in from his friends and his other family, and, you know, the girl that he's fallen in for at his new high school, and the athletics race that he desperately wants to win. And, you know, it's kind of trying to highlight really that when grief is happening to someone, it's not just black and white. There is still joy and happiness around you. That you know, that, and that joy and that grief really try to battle for your attention.
I love that. What was the quote? That kiss came bubbling up like champagne.
Yeah,
that first, I mean, like, kiss, like champagne. Yeah, we all remember it.
No, but I'm really, really proud of it. It's just so exciting to see it have something that's hard, that's a hard thing that I can hold, you know?
Yeah.
Like that can exist for as long as its pages will let it. And actually, one of my favorite things, the whole thing for me, the thing that makes the whole thing work, it's speaking about my daughter Sophia, is the dedication on the very first page. And being able to see that, you know, on a piece of paper, and knowing that my daughter will be able to read it one day, hopefully one day, when she's old enough, then yeah, it really kind of makes it all worth it in a weird way.
Yeah. Can I read that out? Do you mind if I read it?
No, of course. Go for it.
Dedicated to my daughter, Sophia O'Kine. Your grandmother was strong, smart, caring, and hilarious. I see more and more of her in you each day. I love you more than anything in this world, Dad.
Oh, Dad.
That's so sweet.
Come on.
Mate, you should have done the audiobook. You could have narrated. I've already done it, though.
No, you want to sell copies of the audiobook. We're not the guys.
Just know Sam Robinson's available for the next one, Matt. But look, this novel is based on a show, so you kind of had something to go from to turn into a novel. But what was it like trying to, you know, work through this? Was it discussing the cancer? Was it a burden to turn into a novel? Was it helpful for you working through it?
I mean, writing a novel is not easy. That's certainly something that I learned. And at one stage, you've got this sort of, on one side, you've got this beautiful freedom that you can really just go and sit by I'd go to like my local pool at Victoria Park and just sit next to it, and I'd stare at this beautiful blue water while the sun was out, and I'd sit with my laptop and just spend a lot of time thinking, and that's all great. But then also, you know, there's nights at home when it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you're lying in bed and your baby's crying, and you're like, and all you can do is, and all you're doing is thinking about what it must have been like for, you know, a 42-year-old woman to be lying in a bed at night with breast cancer, trying to figure out how she's going to explain all that to her son. So, I mean, it certainly brought up both the sort of beauty of the job and the sort of, well, the pain in it, I guess. But that's kind of, it was always, you know, whenever you're hitting up against a difficult topic or something that you're struggling to talk about, I always find that that's when I tell myself, oh, well, you got to keep going then. This is where the good stuff comes from. Because it's that sort of realness and pain that people connect with. And so I never shy away from that. It's always the most important thing. So if you hit on something, if you hit on a nerve, then just keep pressing and keep pressing, you know, keep digging, and you'll get to the source of the real humanity of the product that you're trying to put out.
I think it's an important conversation for, you know, certainly you as a comedian, but the idea of, like, you can't do brightest light unless you've done darkest night. Like, that's often the strength of a lot of comedians, is that they've felt those emotions and they know what it's like, and that feeds the comedy side of life.
Well, absolutely. And, I mean, and you just don't want everything to be all fun and games. I mean, like, because that's just not how life is.
Yeah.
So you got to have some... You know, you got to have all different shades to every sort of conversation that you're having. And I mean, for me, I always, no matter what show I'm doing, whether it's on stage, whether it's on TV, whether it's in a book, it's using the comedy to break you out of the of the the darkness, which is where the actual funny stuff is most effective.
Something else that's so prominent in this book, Matt, is the fact that it's set in 1998.
Great year. Oh, my
Pretty
word.
Pretty Fly for a White Guy was number one on the Hottest 100. The Super League had just finished.
Oh. Yeah, but I was in year six, so I feel like I totally fit into this kind of book. But I was thinking about your daughter, Sophia, and are there things that you are sad that she is going to miss out on that you had back in 1998 growing up?
Oh, yeah, you know, I'm so disappointed she's not going to be able to understand what it's like to have to share a phone line with the internet and your other family members. It's funny. I mean, that's going to be one of the things that I enjoy about people reading the book is the things that my character has to do that you just don't do anymore. You know, like to get picked up from school after school, you'd go to the bus stop and you'd make the call from the public phone, but you wouldn't put any money in. And then, you know, the phone would cut out and then you'd have to ring one more time to make sure that your dad didn't think that it was some pranksters. And then you'd get picked up.
She'll never have the joy of going down to HMV and buying the latest release from Limp Bizkit. You know that.
I used to spend hours at HMV. Do you know, I mean, some of my most memorable moments are in HMV. I remember seeing they broadcast the Spice Girls Wannabe, that music video clip on like the big screen at HMV while I was listening to some of the CDs that are on the sort of rack there. I remember looking at these this girl group on stage and on this big screen. I remember thinking, well, they're not going to last. And, you know, I think I really proved them right. I'm wrong. But yeah, you know, there certainly is that. But that's also the interesting thing about a book, because part of me is like, you know, why write a book? Because, the world does seem to be all about, you know, Netflix specials and everything is online. And it's like, well, books have lasted the test of time. And that's why it will be amazing that my daughter can actually hold this book and read it and see what life was like for her dad growing up.
So good. Hey, it'd be wrong for us before we go to not get a few tips from you. You're a breakfast radio king, mate. You're a legend.
This is surreal for me because I listened to you and Alex for years.
Both big fans of yours.
Yeah.
You crumb. Yeah. Do you have any tips for us?
Oh, the best tip that Alex Dyson taught me, which was, I was telling my sister about it just the other day because we were on holidays recently, having a bit of a family holiday, and it's still stuck with me, all right? When you're doing the breakfast radio thing, or any, really, this goes for any work, all right? The rule is either get 4 hours sleep or 8 hours sleep. Never get 6 hours sleep.
That is wild.
All right?
Okay.
That is the danger zone, all right? Because eight hours sleep, you're good to go. You've had a full 8 hours. You're feeling rested. You're great.
Yeah.
4 hours sleep, you're delirious. It's beautiful. Everything that rolls off your tongue, hilarious.
Right.
Never sleep 6 hours.
Okay.
I got a second follow-up question. As a guy who's just getting into stand-up comedy, how do you handle it when you bomb on stage?
Oh,
Matt O'Kine never bombs on stage.
No,
yeah, I've forgotten, mate.
Stop it. I bet you've bombed once or twice in your life.
Oh, look, I mean, I'm working through new material. I had to work through some new material shows last week, and, you know, not all of them go well, that's for sure. You just kind of got to treat it like you do any other job. I mean, comedy is like if you stop elevating yourself into a situation, into this belief that what you're doing is more difficult than any other job, then just kind of treat yourself like you're working at a cafe and you put through some orders wrong and, you know, some people didn't get their meals right and everyone's a bit cranky. But at the end of the day, you're just a human who tried something and it didn't work. So, you know, chin up.
I like that.
So good.
That's really good.
Well, I mean, you know, you could always give up as well. That's always, don't know. That's always an option.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I mean, the thing about comedy is, though, here's the thing about stand-up, though. You never learn anything from the good gigs, all right? Because all you do is pat yourself on the back and think you're a champion, and you get along with your day. When you do, when you bomb, when you do a bad gig, those are the ones where, sure, for 10 or 20 minutes or a full day, you think, well, I'm never going to do this again, and I suck, and I'm a horrible person, and I regret everything I've ever done in my life. But as soon as you get through that pain, then you start breaking down. Well, where did I go wrong? Maybe I should reverse the punchline on this one. Maybe I should have used the rule of three here. Maybe I should wait a second before I bring maybe I should change perspective in that joke and say it from the other person's point of view instead of my own. Maybe I should use physicality. You know, and then you start breaking everything down, and it turns into a well-crafted joke.
Love it.
That's great. Matt O'Kine, it's been so much fun to talk to you about your brand new book. It's called Being Black and Chicken and Chips. It's in bookstores everywhere today.
Go read it.
Hey, please do. Thanks so much, guys. All the best, hey.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.